Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is number 68 on today, the fine Wednesday, January 26, 2005. My name is Link Fezzenden, and we do, of course, have Dan.
Hey.
And Alan on the mic. Hello. Alan, are you there?
I'm here.
Alan is calling us today from on location. From studio from Studio E in Easton. And we also have Pat with us again tonight. How you doing, Pat?
Excellent. How you doing?
Great. Well, we got all kinds of really nifty stuff to talk to you about tonight. So just hang in there for just a moment. We're going to play a quick promo. We'll be right back at you. Yeah.
What I said.
Whether you are just interested in learning what Linux is, or you're a guru in good standing, there's something for you at the Southern California Linux Expo. We have speakers on introductory topics for beginners, as well as more advanced topics for IT professionals and software developers. We're working on bringing some of the most influential people in open source to scale, including John Mad Dog Hall of Linux International and kernel developer Randy Dunlap. Scale isn't just a business show. We invite local Linux user groups to demo Linux applications, part of the reason Scale has been called the premier grassroots Linux show in the United States. So mark your calendar. Scale 3X, the third annual Southern California Linux Expo, will be February 12th and 13th, 2005, at the Los Angeles Convention Center. For more information, visit our website at socallinuxexpo.com. We will see you there.
Hi, I'm Matt from Lugger Radio in the UK.
Oh, that is so jolly.
Who was that?
It's CBBC presenter.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm interviewing Blue Chunks.
I was doing my impression.
Anyway, we're Lugger Radio.
I'm doing my impression of Dan there because, you know,
it looks
he's,
like
he's
that.
Jolly when he does his. No, it's Alan who looks Alan. Like Hack. But Dan's
which
jolly
is
one
that looks like me?
Alan.
He doesn't look like me.
Lincoln's got the tall hat, so you remember.
Is his name actually Lincoln?
Lincoln.
Is his surname?
No, his surname's Fester.
His name's not Lincoln. Lincoln. His name's Lincoln Abraham.
Link on.
The link on to Linux.
Link, anyway,
link,
again,
tech, link,
we're
link,
Lugger Radio.
Yeah, we're Lugger Radio over in the UK. That's lugradio.org. Come on to our website.
We're British as well. We drink. Like,
arr!
We like drinking.
Cavemen.
Not like
cave, brilliant. Yarr!
Arr! So anyway, we're going to
Lugger Radio.
Because we've only been given about 30 seconds. Come and listen to Lugger Radio. Lugradio.org. I'm sure you'll like it. If you like the Linux link tech link show, I'm sure you'll like Lugger Radio.
That's right. They're sure that you will like Lugger Radio. And you should. In fact, have you caught up yet, Dan? Listening to Lugger Radio episodes?
You know what? No.
I still listen to 7.
What's that?
I still got to listen to the latest one. I just downloaded it the other night.
Well, they have the next one is scheduled for release on Monday, right?
I grabbed the podcast. You know, I grab. You use Bashpotter. I did not see it the last time I used Bashpotter. The last two times. I usually do it on, like, a weekend. I don't recall getting the latest episode of Lugger Radio, because if I did, that would be the first thing I would
have
listened to.
I got it. Monday or Tuesday.
I will, since I run
my Bashpotter and a cron job in the morning, so I usually get them on Tuesday.
Well, see, I can't do that because I don't leave my laptop up all the time, and most of the time it's at work, and with the firewalls and everything there.
They block
a lot of those sites.
You are bad man. You know what? In fact, the reason I brought that up is because it was either yesterday or today I got their last episode again for the second time. So it is possible that they might have had some sort of problem with their RSS feed and just fixed it. And when they updated it this last time, I got the show again.
So, well, I'll run it again tonight.
Yeah, you should check it out.
And we'll see what happens.
It's good stuff. And just want to, you know, give a quick shout out and say hi again to Matt. And Matt, of course, is one of the hosts over there at Lug Radio, and you know, he keeps in close contact with us, and he's a cool guy. So thanks for keeping us in mind when you have things going on there, Matt. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The good news.
Good
for those who aren't on the chat.
Good news.
We are streaming on BIMRev Radio right now.
That's right.
We will be streaming live every week on BIMRev Radio.
You know, give the URL out there and see if some people will connect.
www.binrev.com is their actual URL, but for the stream, it's www.binrev.com/main. We'll get you on the streams. We'll also be streaming. The show will be repeated a couple of times, I guess, throughout the week. I'm not sure what their schedule is. I'd have to look on their website. It just got all set up today, so that's why we had a little difficulty with starting the show and making sure everything's running fine. So that's another place. If you're not getting the stream, if you're listening live, you're not getting it that well from our server, head over to BinRev. They probably have a fatter pipe there. And be good to go.
Yeah, what Dan said. And for just another little tidbit of information, we have a friend by the name of David McDonald's, who set us up another mirror.
Excellent.
It's awesome. So please, everybody, check out http://tlls.canadiantechie.com. That's CanadianTechie.com. He's got a mirror going for us over there, and we just want to tell him thanks. We really appreciate it.
Yes, you know, thank you very,
sure
very
we
much.
Get it on the, we'll get it on the list, ASAP.
Mm-hmm. I used to have a foster brother named Chino from Cuba who used to use, instead of saying very, he'd say Betty. So he'd say, I like that very much.
It's very good.
Very, very good. Yeah.
Very, very good.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
You might not like it, but I do.
You like it very much.
Very, very good. And this is some, what is the beer, Pat?
This is called, it's in French, it means the gnome. It's a Belgian ale. Very good. I'm enjoying it.
But I'm using XFCE.
Don't make a difference. Right, you could use anything you want.
It was lame. Right, I'm not using gnome. I'm using missed that one altogether.
We got a guest tonight.
We have a guest.
And it's not me.
Another guest tonight.
Well, you're a guest, too.
Actually, Patrick's not really a guest.
Patrick's like luggage, man.
He's been integral to the show for some
like
time
luggage.
Now. He's actually like the fourth member
like
of the show.
You know, like luggage.
The guy who just doesn't show up.
You get luggage, and you know, you ever get luggage once, and then it follows you around for 700 years? And you could be like going, you know, 40 years later, you're still carrying around that 1965.
It's like catching a venereal disease while you're on vacation and bring it home. You can't get rid of it.
You can't get rid of it. It's just always there.
Patrick comes over with some good beer, and he's the reason why we'll have Marcel on the show tonight.
That's right.
Fingers crossed.
That's right.
We kick Alan off and get Marcel on.
All things.
Goodbye, Alan.
Don't kick me off.
Die, die, die. I'll take pleasure in hitting that disconnect button.
You know, we also have. I have a really good question. Yeah, you guys remember Will Simpson, right?
From
Will Simpson, Doug.
Yeah, no, I was trying to think of the other guy's name. Will Smith, what show he was on, and I was going to say from. What was that show?
Not from iRobot or whatever.
No, no, what was
Fresh
the TV?
Prince
Fresh Prince. Yeah,
Will Simpson for the Fresh Prince. Yeah,
the bad actor.
No, this is Will Simpson from WillSimpson.org.
Oh,
I'm going to
get hate mail for that, Pat.
He's
awesome. And he's the one that does the really cool photography website.
Right.
Anyway, He wrote me, actually it was last week he wrote me after the show. He says, great show, never seem to get it together to listen to the stream live or Skype in, but he wants to ask us a question, wants to know if we can cover this on a show. So I figured I would, you know, I would pose it to you other three posers and see what you think. He says, I run Debian. No, it's Debian. 267 with KDE 3.3 on his Dell 8200 laptop. And he wants to know what his options are for connecting to a headless Linux box on his home network. He says, you know, SSH, VNC, X Windows, whatever's possible, you know, which options do we suggest, and briefly, how would we configure the best option? And he says he wants to use it to configure another machine and set up file sharing and stuff like that. So what do you think? What would you be your suggestion, Dan?
For setting up a headless machine?
He has a headless machine.
Mandrake, right?
Yeah, he wants to be able to remotely configure it. I'm guessing using, you know, GUI tools.
Well, why? You can remotely configure any Linux distribution.
Right.
You want to... I wouldn't go with... if this is internal, and it's only going to be, you know, used internally...
Right.
I would right off the bat say, hey, use Webmin. If you want to do, like, configuration stuff and
well,
work with just about every distribution.
I guess he probably wants to, you know, he wants to have a remote X connection to it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it going to be, you know, accessible from the outside, or is it going to be firewalled off but not intended for the outside?
I'm just assuming that he wants, like, a remote desktop.
He wants a remote.
That's what I'm getting out of the email.
So he wants, like, an X server.
If it's just remote configuration, I would, you know.
So he wants to export, and he wants to use it like as an X server.
Right, as an X server.
Across the internet or through his... See, you guys...
Well, I would assume it's just on his home network.
Just on his home network?
I would assume so.
He says, what's the question
What
now?
Are my options? You weren't even paying attention.
Yes, what are your options?
You suck. He says, I run Debian 267 with KDE 3.3.1 on his Dell laptop. I want to know what my options are for connecting to a headless Linux box on his home network.
SSH?
Right.
If you're going to run it as like an X server
right.
and do it that
depending
way,
on whether he wants
why not
to
check out
desktop?
The Linux Terminal Server project? Their package runs on
That's
just about...
That's not what he's talking. He just wants it. He wants to have an X connection to a headless box.
Do VNC.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, SSH works if you're just doing that.
SSH is great if you just want to push one thing over at a time.
Yeah, but right. you can just push X out, too.
Whole, you can, but it's a lot easier. It's a lot harder to configure than just setting up a VNC server. You know what I mean? And that was my all-time easiest answer, like the easiest thing I could think of, is just, you know, install VNC on the box. Start a VNC server and then just connect to it that way.
You could just export a X display.
But I wanted to hear your guys' opinion because
I like the VNC solution. That's
yeah,
not
I agree.
Easiest.
Like I wouldn't.
You guys shilling whoring out for VNC.
VNC's great, man.
I have to use VNC every day.
I'm using
good.
It right now, so.
But no, like
Pat, I'm
myself,
sorry.
I would go through like a SSH. You know, I will go through an SSH connection, do it on the command line. But some people really like to have, you know, they like to use those GUI
yes.
configuration tools. And as far as I'm concerned, if, you know, if that's the thing that you're looking for, I'm not saying that you cannot set up, you know, an X server and get a remote X going on another place. It's not as easy as it sounds. Sometimes it is. Depends on it. You know, sometimes the distribution set it up really easy. Sometimes you have to go through all kinds of hoops with...
If you're running KDE on both sides, you can run KDE desktop sharing, which I think is on
which
top
is,
of
now,
VNC.
Did you figure that out yourself, or did you look at the chat over there?
Actually, I've used that, the KDE desktop sharing.
All that is VNC. You can do
exactly.
The same thing
it's just KDE on top of the VNC.
But yeah, I would say if you have to have the whole desktop, use VNC because it's real, real fast, real easy, real simple to set up. If you have to do... Like, if you don't have to have a whole desktop, you're just looking for one particular application, use SSH, and that gives you the added option of,
there's
you know,
the terminal server client, the GTK version, which is in actually this month's Linux Magazine.
Yeah.
Which allows you to connect to just about any kind of remote client.
What Dan's saying.
So, you know, that's something else you might want to check out, too. You have different protocols, RDP, RDP5, VNC, XDMCP, ICA. So there's tons of different protocols that you can use there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. You know, if it's just internal thing, VNC is great. Or if you actually want to create, like, a terminal server, that's good, too.
Yep.
Why not? Fire away.
Exactly.
I think there's that's the beauty of it. There's so many different options. You don't have to just stick with VNC. You can export an X11 display. You can actually have a display manager log right in.
Sure.
Right into that machine.
Yeah, you can have it give you options to log in.
Try them all.
That's it. See which works best on your system.
All depends on, you know, it depends on.
Go Gadget Go.
It depends on what, you know, really what you're looking for.
Go Gadget
just
Terminal
for a
Server.
Quick answer, I would say, you know. Quick answer, either SSH into it and do it.
I set that up as a Windows Terminal Server.
Yeah. Or just use VNC, which is real quick.
VNC is great.
Yeah. But, you know, I actually have never used VNC from, well, yes, I have. But that's through an SSH tunnel. I've never natively used VNC from one Linux machine to another Linux machine in the same, like, physical location. Because I really don't see a need to. And I can figure
it out. Well, there you go. Turn around. It's going on right now in front of your very eyes.
But it's not that I haven't used that that before, but I usually use it through an SSH tunnel between my house and work.
Right. Sometimes VNC is a dog.
Sometimes it is.
Oh,
sometimes it is.
Boy. I've SSH'd into a workstation at work from my machine at home so that I could reset it for somebody so they could do a, it's just not working. Hold on, let me reboot the machine. Whoa.
You can do that?
I have to use it all the time to fix my mother's machine all the time.
Oh, man.
You know, it weirds people out because, like, after you do that to them the first time, like, a couple weeks later, they're like, my machine was acting funny. Were you in my machine?
It's just like Windows.
I don't get it. Were you doing something to my machine? Are you lying to me?
I did that too, yeah.
You
were
silly
you in my
goose?
Machine the other day?
Oh, you know what? We're 5 minutes past our call time into Marcel.
Oh, no.
We should probably
see
about
we gotta pick him up.
A ring-a-ling-a-ling. Ding, 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 do. Hold on a second,
ding,
Pat.
Yeah, and Alan.
As I change screens here.
We're going to have to cut you off, Alan, so we can see if we can get a hold of Marcel. Hang on.
Ain't no problem.
All right. All right. Goodbye, Alan.
I'll talk to you in a few moments.
That's what you think.
All right. Let's see what happens. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, Marcel. Good day.
Hello.
Fantastic.
Good evening, Marcel.
How are you keeping?
All right, yourself?
Doing fine.
This is fantastic. It's Marcel, ladies
Hello,
and
Marcel.
Gentlemen.
Hey.
It's Marcel.
It's amazing. It works. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
We have a zillion people on this, too. We have Marcel and Alan and Pat and Dan and myself, Link.
Marcel Gagne. Is that pronounced right?
Hey, how come I'm the only one with a picture here on this Skype screen?
We're lazy.
Yeah.
We're mysterious.
Because if we put our picture on there, you wouldn't answer it. That's why.
The truth comes out.
Hey, I got a picture there, don't I?
I don't know. It's amazing the people I'm willing to talk to, actually.
Oh, here we go. We did the interview bottom of the barrel now that you've hit the tech show, right?
It's all uphill from here.
That's not nice.
Shall anyone introduce myself?
You
don't
have to let you guys go with that.
I thought we did introduce him.
Oh, Fred.
This is Marcel Gagne. Is that pronounced right? Gagne?
Yeah, Marcel Gagne. That sounds pretty darn good to me.
Marcel Gagne. If you're at all in the Linux community or in, you know, getting involved in Linux, you've had to come across his name.
Really, this is the man who needs no introduction, really.
Well, we're going to introduce him
anyhow. If you've read any books or perhaps picked up a Linux journal or something like that,
he has three books out.
You can't miss him.
Linux System Administration, A User's Guide, Moving to Linux, Kiss the Blue Screen of Death Goodbye, And his new one, moving to the Linux business desktop. He writes a monthly column in Linux Journal called...
And all sorts of stuff.
It's an award-winning column.
Yep. And you know what? That's probably the first article I read in Linux Journal every month.
Oh,
and I'm rushing to my computer afterwards to start compiling some applications. And he's also you're the editor of the up-and-coming Tux magazine, yes?
Well, no.
No.
Okay.
Boom.
Got to update the website, Marcel.
Jeez, I should have warned you about that ahead of time. Actually, they decided that they would make strictly a web publication, a PDF format publication. So,
right.
So it's been brought entirely in-house, and we're not doing the magazine. At least I'm not, anyway.
See, now, that's one of the things I was going to... I'm glad Dane got to that, because that's one of the things I was going to ask you. I remember looking at that the other day, because I was going to purchase said magazine for my non-Linux native father. And then I went and looked at the site, and it said that they were going to do it online. So,
yeah,
I was bummed.
So they're going to
with that change. I'm no longer doing it because that I was going to be doing the print magazine, and since there's no print magazine, well, I'm off doing whatever other things it is I normally do here.
Well, of course, then we will make sure that we follow you with our support, right?
That's a bummer. So
that's a bummer.
I was not aware that. So now is this. This magazine, the PDF, is that going to be by subscription only?
I think quite honestly, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it's going to be available for download off the website.
Because I'm wondering, what happens to all those people who subscribed
already? They all got their money back.
Oh, because they still have the subscribe now on the website.
Yeah, except I think that the subscribe, and again, I haven't looked at it in a few days, quite frankly. Since I wasn't doing it, I went off and started, continue working on my fourth book. But anyway, my understanding is what's going to happen is if you subscribe at this point, and again, you should go to the website and read this to get the real skinny on this. But I think what's going to happen at this point is basically you're subscribing to an email, which is going to come you'll get an email in your mailbox that says, hey, there's a new issue out, come and download it, that sort of thing.
Huh.
Uh-huh. So there you go.
Woo! What's your fourth book?
Yeah, what's this fourth book we're talking about here?
You
just kind of slipped that in and trying to see if we were paying attention, but,
I'm not supposed to tell.
It's too late for that, but you know what?
I know. I'm sure your editors
aren't listening to the show anyway because,
Well, that's true. Let's just say that it is very much desktop Linux oriented. How's that?
Ah,
fantastic. Now,
that was good.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, it's been a couple of years since "Kiss the Blue Screen of Death" came out, actually, I'm immensely proud of that book because it's been extremely successful. But it's it's time to do something new and exciting, and again. Take the whole desktop Linux experience one step further, with the whole intention of, okay, everybody all together now, Linux world domination.
Yeah. So this book is completely about Slackware then, right?
Debian.
Let me ask you a question, Marcel, because I have...
Yes, go ahead.
I have purchased Moving to Linux for my father, and
yes.
It's a fantastic book. I really like that...
Thank you.
It's great because it comes with a copy of Nopix, and you can follow along and do everything that's in the book with that copy of Nopix. Really, really fantastic. I know that you are a big fan of the KDE desktop.
Yes.
And my question for you is, I know over the past couple of years, KDE has garnered a lot of favor, a lot of popularity. It's been given like thumbs up all the time, and it just seems to me, and maybe I have my ear to the wrong walls, but GNOME has, in the past couple of months, been really, really kind of gaining a lot more support in the Linux community than it used to, and some people are even talking about GNOME pushing out KDE. Have you gotten that impression too, or have you heard any of those waves?
Well, I mean, I hear things all the time. I try to keep my ear to the ground as much as possible, and I chat with a lot of people as much as possible, and I read everything as much as possible. But the fact of the matter is, I still think that KDE is way out front. We did a I mean, I've watched and paid attention to a number, you know, and actually run polls which showed that basically, if you took a look out there at everybody running every desktop that exists, you've got about, on average, you've got about 66% of the people are running KDE, about 30% are running GNOME, and then there's a smattering of every other desktop out there. For what it's worth, by the way, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of Window Maker.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I have always thought Window Maker was totally, totally cool. I just dig I love dock apps like crazy. But if I'm going to turn over...
You've got to see Dan's desktop then.
What's that?
You got to see Dan's desktop with all his stuff floating around on Window Maker.
Yeah, but I mean, I personally really enjoy working in that environment. But the fact of the matter is, if I'm going to turn over a Linux system to, you know, my father, in fact, I set up my parents with a Linux PC 4 years ago, over 4 years ago now, and they've been running Linux ever since, and that was their first PC. They never went the Windows route. They went straight to Linux. And quite frankly, if I'm going to introduce somebody to Linux brand spanking new right off the bat today, I want to give them what I think is, quite frankly, the most mature and the friendliest desktop out there. I'm not knocking GNOME, and I'm not knocking any of the ones that are out there. Like IceWM, great little desktop, fast as can be, little tiny footprint, it's fantastic. Same deal with Window Maker. But I'm not turning that, I'm not going to give that to somebody who's never seen Linux before. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
Yeah, so for me, when I wrote the book, I had to make a decision. I had to make a decision which basically, I had to ask myself the question, if I'm going to give somebody who's never run Linux in their lives, who quite frankly is not a super techie Windows user, a desktop to sit down and start working today, what am I going to pick? And that's what I decided to pick. So I had to make a decision, and I went for that one, partly because it's about 2-1 over GNOME at the moment in terms of the number of people that are using it and, quite frankly, the companies that are supporting it. And I was trying to reach the widest audience as possible. I mean, like I said, I'm not trying to knock any of the desktops. I was just trying to grab as many people as I could and give them what I thought was the best experience possible.
So is it like, what is it that really, really attracts you to it? Is it the integration kind of thing?
Well, the integration. Well, actually, it's a lot of things. The integration, the file selection manager. Mm-hmm. I mean, GNOME has come a long way, quite frankly, from the original GTK1 file selector, right?
Right.
But quite frankly, the file selector in KDE is still orders of magnitude superior to even the current GNOME one. And again, I'm not knocking the GNOME one, but if I'm going to put a Windows user in front of a PC, that's what I have to do.
Do you want to dumb it down as much as possible?
No,
it's well, not dumbing
down. Sure, that's
not
what it is.
I mean, to be fair to the Windows, I find it hard to say things like that. I have to clear my throat when I say it. But to be fair to Windows, as much as possible, the one thing that it's got going for it, you know, when you've put aside the fact that it's incredibly buggy, prone to crashing, spyware, viruses, every damn problem in the book that you can think of.
Don't hold back.
It's got a nice, yeah, slick, simple interface.
It's got
a nice, friendly interface, and that's what I'm trying, you know, yeah. And those are the people that I see coming to Linux who haven't been there from the beginning.
I don't know. I think the one thing that Windows has going for it over anything else is it comes pre-installed on your computer.
Exactly.
Well, actually, I've said that more than once, and I agree with you completely. But it does have, you know, for users who aren't particularly techie,
right,
a reasonably simple interface and a reasonably slick interface.
Right.
Marcel.
But my purpose, my entire purpose, is to make sure that as many people run Linux as possible on their desktop. The server is won. That battle has been won a long time ago. What we've got to do now is get people running desktops.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I have a really good question for you, though. What I would love
Ask
to
me
know...
anything.
What I would
Ask
like
me
to head, don't say that on this show, man. You get yourself in trouble. What I would really like to know is, you know, we're all real admirers of your work, but we want to know what you have on your desktop, what kind of Linux you use, what sort of desktop you have, what sort of little applications that you can't live without, that sort of thing.
Ah. Okay. Well, let's. For
Tell
starters,
us about Marcel.
For starters, I've got a small handful of PCs here. And I've got a couple of them that are running VMware. And under VMware, I've got Zuse, I've got Debian, I've got Fedora, I've got Zandros. I mean, basically, I've got all sorts of different distributions, so I can sit there and wander back and forth and see what's happening in the different ones. I've got a few different live CDs out there. In fact, I've done several remasters of Nopix. As you know, there's one in Kiss the Blue Screen, Death Goodbye, mm-hmm. and there's also one in the latest book, Moving to the Linux Business Desktop. So I've played with a lot of distros, but what you're asking is, what do you have on your notebook, the one that you're actually chatting with us on at the moment? And what I've got on my desktop is Mandrake 10.1. That's actually what I'm running. And I'm running KDE 3.3 for a desktop. I've got a machine next to me that's got 3.4 beta 1 on it, so I can muck about with it and see if I can break it and things like that. Applications I can't live without. OpenOffice is a definite. I use Contact for my organizer and my email package. I like it because, in the end, unlike Lookout in the that other operating system, the components are still separate. You can actually separate
Lookout.
Them running them separately, and I like that. I mean, I want my email package to just be an email package when I want it to be, and so on, if you know what I mean.
You don't want it to be a virus catcher?
No, I don't. No, let me see. I've got Copeet for instant messaging and things like that. I've got Neverball when I want to drive myself crazy.
Oh,
and,
that's a fun game.
Ever play Neverball?
Yes.
Neverball is so cool. You play really have to have Neverball on your PC.
Do you have? You play Neverputt?
Yeah, I played Neverputt as well, yeah.
I played Neverball on Linux and OS X, and the OS X version allows you to use the arrow keys instead of the mouse. And I haven't been able to do that on the Linux version. Have you tried using the arrow keys instead of the mouse on the Linux version?
No, actually, I just use the mouse, so I don't know.
The arrow keys make it a lot easier, I'll tell you that.
Oh,
that's,
yeah, definitely.
That's a fantastic game.
You were asking applications I can't live without. I always have, I've said this in print, I've said this on websites and so forth. I'm still a two-browser guy. I always have a copy, actually I always have multiple copies, multiple tabs open in Conqueror, and the same thing in Firefox. I've got probably about 12 shell sessions open, connected by Secure Shell to various systems and so forth. I run 8 virtual desktops and, I don't know, just a whole bunch of other stuff. Every once in a while I have to play something, which is a Free Droid RPG is fun. Let's see, Super Tux is fun. It's brainless, but it's fun. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, I mostly try to play with a lot of leading edge stuff so I can write about it. I mean, mm-hmm. that's always what I'm doing. I'm always looking for a new piece of software, something somebody's been working on. I load it, I test it up, I work with it, I write about it, I move on.
Well, now you have something really good to write about. You can write about the tech show. Right?
Hey, Marcel, we have a question from the chat room. Mike,
yes.
Mike wants to know, what do the different distros need to do to increase their footprint on the desktop?
Oh, ignore that. That was my parents trying to get a hold of me.
Did you catch that whole question, Marcel?
Yeah. What desktop distribution, or what do we have to do to get more people on the desktop? Is that the idea?
Pretty much.
I should go back and take a look at that question here. Is it Mike, you said?
Yes.
Let me see. I've got the IRC log going here. Mike. What did distros need to do to increase their footprint and desktop usage? You know what? I think what they have to do is sell people on the idea that they've got a better product. I have gotten numerous people running Linux by basically showing them that it is a better product. We did the same thing. I mean, that's the same thing that happened with Firefox and so forth. Show them that there is a better product out there and that they can do the things that they're used to doing. I think that most major distributions, quite frankly, are still a little bit scared of pushing the desktop. They're doing it, but I think they're a little bit scared about it. partly because they're very, very comfortable in the server market, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, it's no big deal selling a Linux server to do to set up a Samba server, to set up a web server, to set up a firewall, stuff like that. That's a no-brainer. I mean, people will just buy that without any trouble. Selling desktops is a little scarier for companies to do. And I don't know that they're sufficiently aggressive about it, or that, you know, I think they go in there making apologies and things like that, or it's like, you know, well, you might be able to do this. I always work from the premise that you don't need Windows, period, the end. Okay?
You're the man.
I'm going to find you applications that you can run under Linux, and if there's something that you desperately, desperately, desperately need to run, we'll come up with another way for it to happen, and we'll make it happen in Linux as opposed to in Windows.
Right.
So mostly, they just have to go out there and keep spreading the word and keep trying to push it and so forth. What I'd like is every single person who's on the channel tonight, how many people we got on the channel tonight here? Every single person who's on the channel tonight, I would like them to make a copy of their favorite Linux distro. Please make it something nice and friendly. And sometime in the next 5 to 7 days, give it to somebody. You know? Show them that there is an alternative to running Windows, and that alternative means you're not going to be bugged down with spyware, you're not going to have to worry about viruses, you're not going to have to deal with any of that crap. And that's part of what makes it a better product. And yes, you can still play games, you can still play solitaire, you can still IM with your friends, you can still surf the net, etc.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned playing solitaire, because I've had my wife running Linux for quite a while now, a number of years. And the one when I just recently switched distributions on her, I had to do an upgrade. It's running a really, really old version of Slackware. I changed her to Ubuntu. And the one thing that she wanted to know was if she was going to still be able to play solitaire on the computer. She's like, I don't care. Anything else? You know, just get the web browser running and make sure I can play solitaire. And
you know what,
and
though?
She was good.
Show them solitaire in Linux. Show them the fact that you've got all these cool card fronts and all these cool card backs.
Oh, yeah,
and
she was.
Show them that they've got like 15 different versions of solitaire.
Right, she was impressed with that when they scrolled through the list of different versions of solitaire. You know, she was in heaven then. All kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, no kidding.
Marcel, have you tried Ubuntu yet?
I have, yeah.
We did a review of Ubuntu 2 weeks ago, and we really like it. What's your opinion of Ubuntu? I mean, as a desktop distribution,
it's fine. It looks pretty slick. The install was a piece of cake. It worked fine. I don't know what else to say. I didn't spend a huge amount of time at it, other than loading it up and making sure that it did configure properly on my system and that I could work with it. Mepis was also really, really nice. I don't know if you had a chance to try that one.
Not yet.
No, my dad runs that one, and he doesn't know anything about Linux, so I'm impressed with that right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, there are an awful lot of things. There's a guy on the channel who just appeared, a guy named John, I happen to know. Hi, John. I happen to know that John is a huge LibreNet fan, and that's one of the ones that he pushes to people in terms of a friendly OS. But, you know, I know you guys have probably covered this a million times, but hey, I'm the one talking, so I'll just say it. Live distros rock, people.
Yeah.
Make copies of live distros. Have 20 or 30 in your possession at all times. Hand them out.
It's hard to keep a hold of live distros. It is.
It is. You'll run out fast, man.
Yeah.
Especially when you work with Windows NT admins. You give them that NOPIC CD, and they pop it right in, and they're amazed what you can do with it.
It is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, live CDs are fantastic. It blows people away when you give it to them like that. It's like, you know, I boot it up, I can work with it and so forth. And most of them now, I mean, NOPIX included, have got a, you can back up your settings and save them either through a USB key or to a diskette or whatever.
Sure.
So that you can, you know, boot it back up and start from where you left off. You don't have to sit there and reconfigure them every time. So it's fantastic.
All right, so now everybody on the chat wants to know what the best live CD is, the best live distro.
You know, I know this sounds, this is going to sound weird. I still think that NOPIX is amazing, okay? However, part of that is because I've gotten really good at remastering it, so.
Uh-huh.
So, So I make, you know, I make custom copies of Nopix, and I mean I've made them for I'm making one for the next book, and I made one for moving to the Linux Business Desktop and moving to Linux Kiss the Blue Screen of Death Goodbye, and Nopix has, I mean Nopix led the pack, mm-hmm. quite frankly, with clean, simple, you know, do them all Nopix distros. So I'm still a huge fan of Nopix, despite the fact that I also tell people that when it's time and you've decided that you're done, you know, with Windows and that, hey, you're going to jump in and you're going to run Linux, despite all of the wonderful things I say about Nopix, and I think it's fantastic, it does not have the friendliest installer in the world, let's be honest.
Right.
And I tell people at that point, you know, go out and get yourself a copy of Mandrake, or, you know, if they happen to be friends or relatives, I'll give them a copy. And, or Zuza, or, you know, something that's really slick, really up to date, and that they're going to find a lot of support out there. And that is actually one of the advantages of going with something like that, or heck, Fedora for that matter, is there's a heck of a lot of people out there running the stuff.
I'm going to jump.
God, he got real quiet there.
I'm going to jump in and be the pessimist here. One of the real sore spots with Linux has been video editing and DVD offering. We know about Kino. It's a nice little application. Cinelera, it seems to be so complicated that most people can't use it. I think what needs
or
to happen...
install it.
Or install it. What needs to happen, there has to be something in the middle that's easy enough for somebody who's a newbie, but it has enough features that someone more advanced could get into it.
You know, you broke up an awful lot there. You were talking about video installation being a problem, or...
Video editing.
Video editing.
Oh, video editing.
Yes.
Okay, I admit that. I actually made a DVD for my family over Christmas, because I have a six-month-old son, you know.
Congratulations.
And of course, as a new parent, I've collected a lot of video, which, of course, I wanted all my family to see, right? I used Kino to transfer Kino, K-I-N-O, to transfer the videos from my digital camera. And by the way, that worked incredibly super slick. I mean, really easy to capture, really easy to cut and, you know, cut frames and so forth, move stuff back and forth, export it to an MPEG, the whole bit. So Kino is actually really, really nice that way. And I actually think that it's a fairly friendly. It needs documentation, quite frankly. That's actually the thing. That's its downside. But even so, it's actually fairly easy enough to work with that you can, you know, with what there is, you can get ahead and actually start doing, you know, reasonably sensible things with it. DVD editing, now there's another problem. About one of the best things that I found out there was something called DVD Author. But yeah, in the Linux world, we need a really nice, slick DVD, you know, DVD editing software. And we don't have anything that I'm aware of that's really that good at the moment.
I've played around a little bit with QDVD Author, which is a KDE front end based on Qt.
Yep.
And that
yep.
shows some promise. It's one guy who's maintaining it. That needs a little work, but that's something to keep an eye on, I think, in the future.
Oh, I think so. I mean... It is one of the ones that I played with as well, and you just said the key word there, which is, you know, it shows promise. And while I was able to create DVDs and, you know, add menus and so forth, it's not the really simple, easy to use thing that I'd like to, you know, give to somebody. So so yeah, we do need something in that department, but there aren't an awful lot of places where we don't have something that's already friendly and really easy to work with. You know what I'm saying?
Right. What do you think, in your opinion, are the problem areas? You know, things that we still have to tackle as a Linux community to get people more easily adjusted and acclimated to using Linux instead of Windows.
Okay, I'm going to start off by saying that Linux is currently ready, and I'm talking ready, totally 100% ready for about 95% of the population out there.
Right.
Okay? Most people use a web browser, they send email, they listen to CDs, or they rip MP3s and listen to music, they watch the odd video clip. And they write the occasional document in their word processing package, which, you know, using word processing packages that have far more features and so forth than they actually need. So quite frankly, for the and games, I mean, there are tons of games in the Linux world. They're not the packaged, boxed games that you can get out there. And, yeah, that's one of the things we need. We need companies to recognize the fact that there is a Linux market out there, that there are Linux consumers out there, so that they can start selling to us. I love the idea that there's a hell of a lot of free software out there, but I also don't have any trouble buying something,
right,
if I think it's worthwhile or if it's something that I want. And Linux consumers exist. I mean, think about it. We buy PCs, we buy hard drives, we buy printers, we buy monitors, we buy mice. We buy all sorts of crap, and we have to convince manufacturers that we exist. And here's another thing. Okay, another thing that I like to ask people. Everybody on the channel, pay attention. Next time you go out to buy a piece of hardware or a computer or anything whatsoever, ask them if it works with Linux. They probably won't know. It doesn't matter. Okay? What you're doing is getting the idea across that people like you and me and everybody else on this channel exist.
Right.
That we spend money, that it's worth paying attention to us and supporting us and providing us with product. Be nice to these people, okay? They're just, you know, they work in the store. They don't necessarily know a whole heck of a lot. Every once in a while, you'll get a guy that actually knows Linux, and that's cool. But for the most part, they won't know. And even if you know that that thing that you're buying works with Linux, ask them anyway. Then ask them if you can return it if it doesn't work. Even if you know that it's going to work, ask them this. Just to get the idea into their heads that we exist. You know what I'm saying? And eventually, that's going to build up to the point where in the store, when they're sitting there talking about what they should be buying and so forth, the people are going to say, well, you know, we had a bunch of guys come in asking for Linux stuff. And it's going to make a difference over time. So we want to increase the footprint of Linux desktops out there. Let's let people know we exist.
Right.
Marcel, I got a question for you.
Ask me anything.
All right, I'm going to ask you something. Actually, I have a couple questions, but I want to get this one in. One of our issues with that we came upon with the Ubuntu review was coming back to non-free software like MP3 playback, and then with regards to video, certain video codecs like QuickTime and Windows Media Player codecs, which are not available or are not as readily available because of licensing issues, but you can still get them if you want to, you know, get them off of the website and install them yourself by hand. What is your feeling with regards to that? That certain segment of, and you say that 95% of the population, they could do what they do already on Windows and Linux, too, but there's still that little bit, like QuickTime Playback, Windows Media Playback, those type of things, Shockwave, which is not available on Linux yet. What's your opinion on that? And also, for those people, we have discussions about using non-free software. What are the alternatives to something like QuickTime or Windows Media Player for video formats that would be acceptable in the open source community?
Yeah, I agree with you. This is a problem area. We've got things that play AVIs and MPEGs and stuff like that, no problem. Obviously, if we're trying to play a DVD, if it's an encoded DVD, we have a problem. Unless you live in a country like Canada, where you can actually get the decoder, but it is a problem area, and it's of course something that if for instance, I'll put my parents. Okay, let's bring my parents back into this, who do play video clips off the net and so forth. What they have on their PC is obviously MPlayer or KMPlayer in their case, because, you know, they've got the nice graphical version of it. And the Win32 codecs are there. And the Win32 codecs, of course, have come off the PLF site, right?
Right.
For anybody who doesn't know what that is, the Penguin Liberation Front, and I never mentioned it. but there are places in the world where those codecs are legal, right?
Right.
And you're allowed to use them. And the PLF sites make those things available to people who want to download them. But unfortunately, that generally means that it's not going to be available on your Linux system unless you do it or unless you ask somebody. Oh, by the way, somebody said, if should we buy Windows, ask them if it works with Linux. Yeah, what the heck, say it. Mm-hmm. And smile when you do it. But anyway, going back to playing videos, the Win32 codecs that we use for MPlayer work perfectly and work without any trouble whatsoever. But, of course, you have to understand at that point that you're dealing with things that, A, aren't supported, or that there might be patent issues, so you should probably check with your local government, or your local country government to make sure that you're in line if you care about such things. But we should have support like that in the Linux world. I mean, some of these things are available for a free download in the Linux world. We need to convince, again, and I'm back to this whole idea that we need to convince people that we exist. If we convince companies that we exist, they'll start producing those things for us as well. I mean, that's why there's a real player for Linux. You know, we can download a real player for Linux.
Right.
That's why there are, there's a Flash player for Linux and things like that. It's because there's starting to be enough of a profile to get people used to the idea that, you know, it's worthwhile producing this stuff for us. We're an audience. We're legitimate audience for people. I've got. Has anybody seen the new Business Week?
No.
God, it got quiet out there.
Business what?
Business Week.
Okay. All right. My wife is an MBA student. Okay. And she has a subscription to Business Week. And on the cover of Business Week this week, it says Linux Inc. in large, bright red capital letters. Go to your bookstore. Check it out. It says Linux. What's that?
This is a story about Linus Torvalds, right? The whole Linux movement.
Well, yeah, Linus Torvalds. On the front, it says Linus Torvalds once led a ragtag band of software geeks. Not anymore. Here's an inside look at how the unusual Linux business model increasingly threatens Microsoft. You know what? It does threaten Microsoft.
Absolutely.
It's worth taking. Absolutely, it threatens Microsoft. We have more people. I know that this number is in contention, but there are more Linux desktops out there than there are Mac desktops. Okay, we're an honest to God, what's the word I'm looking for? Monetary force. I mean, we're worth paying attention to. Linux users are worth paying attention to. And remember you said 95%. Well, you know, how do we address the other 5%? Don't worry about the other 5%. We'll get there. 95% is a huge, huge, huge chunk of people that we can address out there.
I want to be there now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and which we talk about the 95%, and what is another area that's tough, and I find very limiting with Linux, is Linux on PPC, where we've reached a lot of hurdles with, Intel architecture, i386 architecture, i686, and being able to do a lot of the stuff with Flash and video and all the stuff that, you know, desktop users really like to get out of the web. That's lacking on the PPC side. You don't have the same capabilities to see a lot of those codecs. Flash is not available. There's certain applications that I use on a regular basis that aren't available on the PPC side, and I hope that that's going to increase with a lot of the new PPC architecture products coming out.
Yeah, the PPC architecture is going to be on the rise. I think, I think we're about to see some matches between PPC and i386 pretty soon.
I think one of the things to watch is this whole deal with IBM and Livio to see what they're going to do exactly. There's all sorts of rumblings around that they might be pushing a PPC system through Livio.
You running any PPC architecture over there, Marcel?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
No, I don't have anything on PowerPC. The only thing I've done with PowerPC is AIX.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with IBM PowerPC platforms running AIX.
Marcel, I'm going to ask your opinion on something. We're talking about desktop distributions and distributions in general. I was really excited to get this month's copy of Linux Format. Are you familiar with Linux Format magazine?
Yeah, beautiful magazine, slick. It's really cool, yeah.
Yeah, they had a distro showdown.
Here we go.
And not only did I pick up... Linux format. I also picked up Linux World magazine.
Right.
Because they had on the front cover for PPC Mac OS X, Yellow Dog, and Ubuntu Linux. And I read through all these reviews and the desktop show, the distro showdown, and I got to the end and I got to thinking to myself, you know, I've lived a long time in the Slackware world of having to set it up, everything myself, you know, do everything manually. I jumped over to Ubuntu on PPC, and it was like a revelation to me when I plugged in my flash card reader and asked me if I wanted to automatically transfer my photos. I was like, wow, I never had this happen in Linux before for me. And I started playing around with Ubuntu on the i386, and, you know, my scanner worked without a problem, my printer worked without having to have any configuration, and all this stuff just worked so beautifully and integrated so well with one another that I was pumped and excited, and I wanted to see what Linux Format thought about, you know, these distributions, and what Linux Format thought, or what Linux World magazine thought about these distributions, and how I thought Ubuntu was the greatest thing since sliced bread for just a general desktop user. And when I sat down and read the articles, what I got an overwhelming sense of, and still I get this a lot when I read a distribution review, is too much of the article focuses on the installation of Linux. What type of installer was it? Graphical text, whether it detected all the hardware, and not enough applications are there. How well are those applications integrated with one another that if I want to, you know, if I plug in my digital camera, is something like G-Thumb or whatever is on KDE going to come up and say, hey, do I want to import my photos? Do I want to edit my photos? You know, something like that. I don't really see a lot of that. And I think we just focus too much on the installation of Linux as opposed to the actual usage and that. And one of the things, you know, and one more thing I want to add on to that, and I'm bummed that Tux Magazine is not coming to fruition, because I thought to myself, man, Tux Magazine would be a fantastic, you know, a medium that instead of reviews on distributions, that you actually get down and learning how to use some applications like G-Thumb or whatever.
Day to day.
You know, that just absolutely. A general user, so, you know, because I see a lot of that lacking too. Tell me how to use some of these applications. I never knew there was a camera import feature in the G-Thumb until I stumbled upon it. I didn't know there was simple picture editing capabilities in G-Thumb until I stumbled upon it. You know, that stuff just doesn't seem as readily available. Your opinion to my rant. Yeah, how do you see that? Is that ever going to change, or are we still going to be stuck in, you know, two-thirds of the article being about the installation of the distribution instead of the actual usage of it?
Once upon a time, a long time ago, the only people who ran Linux were people who had heavily into technology, or who came from the Unix world. You know, and that's what happened with me. I mean, I came from the Unix world. I saw my first Slackware installation like about, no, heck, 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, and loaded that up and played with that and played with, you know, distribution upon distribution. And I kept thinking, you know, someday this is going to be cool. Someday this is going to be cool. And about 1995, I was convinced that, you know, 1995, 1996, I was convinced there was no looking back. By 1996, I stopped running Windows. But, yeah, I agree with you. Everything seems to be geared. So many of these reviews, I think it's because you've got an old-style crowd that is still. Remember what I said about the idea that we've got a better product, we just have to convince people that we've got it?
Right.
Right.
Unfortunately, a lot of people in the Linux world who are trying to reach the Windows users out there, we're apologizing all the time, and we've got nothing to apologize for because we do have a better product. The fact of the matter is almost any, and I mean almost any modern Linux distribution, is frighteningly easy to install. And in fact, for the most part, it's easier to install than a Windows system.
Almost,
why do I say
definitely.
That? Because I don't have to configure something, reboot it. I don't have to go through any of that crap.
You don't have to fight around on the internet for 6 hours trying to find the right video driver either.
Bingo. And the fact of the matter is the only reason that people find Windows easier to install than Linux is because they don't have to.
Right.
That's right.
They don't have to install it.
if you have to, anybody out there who works in the tech world, who's worked with computers, who's done support and so forth, who's had to install PCs, you know what I'm talking about. Windows is not easy to install. It's not easier than Linux to install. So the fact of the matter is, it's not that big a deal. And if we can get more people to sell PCs with Linux pre-installed, obviously that's going to help a great deal. And in fact, if we can get a lot of PCs with Linux pre-installed out there, I think that's when we're really going to start making huge inroads. So that's a big deal. No, all these reviews shouldn't be focusing on the installation, because the installation is a piece of cake for the most part. It's not that big a deal. I mean, saying I use this particular bleeding edge PC and I didn't get this particular device configured, big flipping whoop. That's going to happen when you're running Windows as well. And my favorite story for this is my niece, who is now 6 years old actually. Last year when she was 5, they bought a PC and they bought her a copy of some Barbie on Ice thing, this game. Well, it required 3D acceleration. I spent 2 days looking for and eventually installing this 3D accelerated driver for Windows. You know what? That's not easy. And that's not something the average person can do either. So let's stop making apologies. We've got a great product. It's no more difficult to run and install than Windows. And yeah, let's have magazines start focusing, you know, and like I said, the Tux Magazine website is still planning on doing just that, providing that sort of stuff. But let's start showing people how to use applications and so forth. That was the whole point, if I can push my book, that was the whole point of the Moving to Linux book. I'm going to show people how you can do all the things, you know, or certainly most of the things, that 95% of the things that you are used to doing in Windows, but doing it in Linux. I'm going to show you how to play movie clips. I'm going to show you how to listen to your CDs, how to surf the web, how to write email, how to use a word processor, etc., etc. Did I answer that?
Yep. Marcel, you hit on a really good point there for a second there. One of the biggest markets that's I think is pretty much, I don't want to say all but neglected, because there's some fantastic applications out there that people are working on, is the market for kids. There is a deluge of children's educational software available for Windows and Mac, and compared on the Linux, there is a small amount. But that small amount, like GCompre and Child's Play, are fantastic applications. But there's, compared to the other desktop operating systems, it's just it's a severe lack there. Now, I've used Wine to get some of those applications to run. It's a little difficult, but I would like to see a lot more children's applications out there for Linux, or at least something that, you know, is cross-platform programming. You know, maybe it's in Java or some kind of, you know, anything that could run over the web seems to run pretty well. But yeah, I think the children's educational market is a big one that really needs to be looked at.
Agreed. Yeah. No, that's true. We do have to. I mean, there are areas. I'm not going to deny where we do need to see more. We do need to see more software, more products, and so forth. But the way that we do that, I mean, it's one of those chicken and egg things. One of the ways we do that is by getting more people running this stuff. Have you been to the Linux for Kids website by any chance?
Yes, I go there every couple of weeks to take a tour of what might be new. Like, I have my kids using Linux. They love it. They love all those applications. The K-Potato, K-Pink, that's a big hit.
Oh, but, yeah.
Great one.
Yeah, I've been there. It's
you know, I actually showed off one of the things that I've been sort of lucky to do lately is, are you familiar with the Call for Help show, Leo Laporte's Call for Help show?
Leo's awesome.
Yes.
On Tech TV?
Unfortunately, here in the United States, Marcel, we don't get Call for Help anymore. It's only up in Canada now.
Well, bugger. Anyway, the Call for Help show is actually still being taped, and the new version is being taped, and it's being run up here in Canada. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but there's a distinct possibility that the people in that the land down under will be seeing it very shortly as well. but at least that's what I hear. But one of the things that I get to do is a couple of times a month I do a show on Call for Help where I show off Linux stuff. I try to show people that it is a friendly desktop, that you know you can do the things that you're used to doing in the Windows world. In fact, I try to show them things that they can't do in the Windows world so that they can, so that they walk away basically going, oh man, if I was running Linux, I could do this. But unfortunately, I'm running Windows. and there are things like that. I mean, push the idea that you're not worried about the virus du jour or the fact that your PC isn't overrun with spyware. Push that idea. Let people know that. Right. This is a huge, huge selling point. The cost to business has been estimated in the billions of dollars. Billions with a B. That's a hell of a lot of money to throw at buggy software all the time.
Sure.
We've got a better product. There are cool things that you know that I show people. On the last Call for Help that I did, I showed them how to run desktop applets, how to run applets in the panel and so forth, like dictionary applets and weather applets and stuff like that. That's really cool stuff. People walk away going, oh man, I wish I could do things like that. 3D desktop. Has anybody seen the 3D desktop switcher?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, that's so cool. You show that to a Windows user and they just walk away going, oh man.
Let me ask you a question about that. I was running 3D Desktop Manager, was it about a year ago that you had brought it up? One thing I noticed was when I had that running, I couldn't play any videos in MPlayer, or certain videos would not play. I had to actually shut off the 3D Desktop Manager to get those videos to play. Did you notice any interference like that?
I'm not talking about 3D Desktop from Sun.
I'm talking about the 3D Desktop Switcher, the carousel, the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had that running for a little while on my machine, and it was great. It was really the coolest thing. But I noticed it interfered with some playback of some videos in MPlayer. Did you notice that at all?
No, I didn't, actually. And I do play video clips, so I haven't noticed it. Sorry.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, I'll have to give it another shot again.
Here's what I want to know. I'm completely interested now in your video segments where you're explaining a lot of this stuff, and I want to know if you have a repository somewhere of video clips from your segments that we can point our listeners to, and you know, someplace that I could go to and watch some of this stuff.
You know, I wish I could say that I did. I don't. I know that the episodes are floating out there in P2P land,
mm-hmm.
but I actually have asked the people at Tech if I can have the clips so that I can show them, and I'm still trying to make that happen. I don't know if I'm ever going to be successful, but it's a tough thing to crack, and I wish that I could give you better news on that.
Well, by all means, please let us know if it's something that we can get a hold of somewhere, because I really like to see that stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, I would love to do that myself.
We're stuck here in the land.
That I would love to make that happen.
Yeah, we're stuck here in the land of the, you know, the RIAA and the DMCS and Comcast.
Comcast has killed Tech TV. it's a real shame what they've done to that channel. It's all gaming shows. The screensaver.
Yeah, no,
They've ruined the screensaver.
Yeah, I know what it looks like these days. Yeah, it's kind of a drag. But, you know... G4 was a gaming channel. That was their focus.
Right.
You know, I personally have to admit, I miss the old Tech TV.
The old screensavers used to have a lot of Linux people on. You used to have Chris DeBono. You were on there once too, weren't you?
Yeah, I was on there, yeah.
You know, it's just a shame, you know, what it's turned into.
What's that tech show they have over here that the LVCG is always on?
Oh, there's some cable local access. Cable access channel thing. What is it called? I don't even remember.
Damn. You know what, Marcel? I think, after listening to you speak, it makes me want to just run right out there and start, kicking up the cause again for pushing Linux. And, you know, I have a neighbor who second time I was over there in 3 months trying to clean up their system from spyware and everything. And I said to them, you know what, if you want to get rid of this problem, you should either go, you know, buy a Mac or we'll switch you over to Linux. And one of the biggest hurdles I always get from them is, well, what about all this software I've already purchased? Well, it's not going to run, but you have better alternatives. And they don't want to hear it. I hate that. That bums me out.
Maybe just
it's tough.
Just bring them a.
I should bring them a Nopix
CD
disc
and stick it in there and let them use it for a minute and see what they think.
Because they, you know, I sat down at that machine and they said to me, "Do we need to buy a new computer?" I said, "What do you do with it?" Well, I write some Word documents and I surf the internet.
But it's slowed down.
But it's, and I'm like, no, really, you don't need a new computer. Your computer's perfect. You just need a new operating system. Well, will I be
That's
able
right.
to run my Yahoo games? Yeah, you'll be able to run my Yahoo games. Well, will I be able to run all this other software we have purchased? No, you won't be able to run that. But, you know, there's far better alternatives out there. They're not even, right. They're far better programs. I don't want to call them alternatives. They're far better programs to the alternatives you're running now. And that's, and again, I think the biggest hurdle even more so is it's just a little different than what they might be used to, and they're scared of that. Do you face that when
oh,
you?
Oh no, I don't. I don't deny that at all. I know that people are scared of the change, and quite frankly, there's still unfortunately a little bit of a feeling that if you're going to be running Linux, you're going to be hanging out with a bunch of freaks and so forth. And unfortunately, there are a bunch of people who still think that way, as ridiculous a notion as that is. There's been this, you know, this picture that's been painted for them. There's also been this picture painted for them that there's no support, despite the fact that
I told you not to put our pictures up on the website, Dan.
Despite the fact that there are multi-billion-dollar companies out there, you know, that are supporting Linux, that are pushing Linux, and so forth. There's a huge amount of support out there. But here's what you do, okay? And I've done this successfully. Like probably 50 times now, okay? The next time somebody asks you to come over and fix their PC, are you ready for this?
Okay.
The next time they come over and ask you to fix their PC, do what I do. You say, I'm going to fix your PC, but I'm going to fix it by installing Linux. That's the only way I'm going to fix your PC. I'm sorry, but I don't want to give you this crappy operating system again. I don't want you having to fix the virus du jour. I don't want you having to have the system running all the spyware and crap and so forth. I want you to run a decent operating system, okay? And give them the opportunity. And if, you know, if they say, no, I want to run Windows, it's like, well, you know, I don't do Windows support anymore. I don't have the time for that. I mean, be nice about it. I always say that. Be nice about it, but no, that's how I fix PCs these days. I install Linux.
I did that to my father-in-law, believe it or not, and it's been a godsend. You know, this is the man who would call me up every other week with, you know, my browser is broken, I've got something going on in email, there's, you know, some kind of links to pornography popping up on his desktop every time he logs in. And I finally told him, you know, listen, if I come over there again, I'm not installing Windows. I'll put Linux on it. And he has called me once in the last 8 months. And that's because he needed to have a PDF reader installed or something like that, you know. And it does work.
Yeah, you didn't install XPDF for him?
And that's frighteningly easy to deal with.
It was installed, I mean, but it just wasn't like pointed to right.
Yeah, and that stuff is already installed by default. I mean, a PDF
right.
reader, it's built into Conqueror,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the KDE desktop. You just click on it, and away you go.
Yep. Yep, and it's like I said, it's been a godsend because I haven't, you know what I mean? And I had to install his printer, too, but, you know.
I'm going to answer Ashley. I'm looking. He says, I must say I'm definitely concerned. Everything's vulnerable in some way. Are you talking about in the Linux world as well?
Okay, I think the question is, Ashley asks whether if Linux Distribution X becomes mainstream, will spyware vendors and virus writers find ways to attack that version of Linux?
I've heard that like a million times now. The fact of the matter is, Linux is a more secure product by design. I'm not saying it's impossible, but the fact of the matter is 70% of the world's web servers run on Linux.
Right.
Okay? That is the majority of exposed web servers out there. And they get cracked a heck of a lot less often than anything that's running in the Windows world.
Sure. Well, they just had
anything is possible. Sorry?
Wasn't there just an article out? I don't remember where I heard it from. There was just an article out that said the average Windows PC gets cracked within 4 minutes, and they said the average Linux computer.
It was months.
It was 3 months now, but it used to be like 72 hours. They said 72 hours. Now it's 3 months before it gets cracked.
Yeah, it's 3 months. And by the way,
and 3 months to 4 minutes is, you know, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and that 3 months, by the way, that's a Linux installation out of the box, as in it isn't hardened.
With no firewall as well, right?
Exactly. That's it. That's a basic installation. Somebody brings home their Linux PC, or somebody brings home, a copy of Zusa, installs it on their PC, doesn't know what else they're doing. It's going to take 3 months to crack that PC on average.
See, now I would bet that it even takes longer than that, because I have yet to find a modern Linux distribution that installs any hackable material. Like, we set up a firewall box here. There was nothing.
Fedora.
Yeah, Fedora box. Fedora, nonetheless. And just a default install, and there was nothing running on it.
Right.
You know, how do you hack nothing? There was
and the whole purpose was to hack it. It was a honeypot. Right. We're like, go ahead,
it's
hack
a
away.
Honeypot
was nothing to hack on
There's
it.
Nothing running on these
crack,
distributions.
Crack away.
They don't run Telnet anymore. They don't run Finger by default. They don't run, NT or anything.
That's right.
And they also have
the fact of the, I mean, the fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter is, everything is vulnerable. That's a fact. I mean, it is possible. It's possible to crack PGP encryption. I mean, you can crack anything if you work at it long enough and hard enough and so forth. But the fact of the matter is, Linux is much more difficult to crack. It's much more difficult to write a virus. In fact, to the best of my knowledge, in recent history, there has not been a virus in the wild. Make note of what I just said. In the wild, there have been viruses written for Linux, as proof of concept.
Certainly, proof of concept, exactly. But nothing, nothing that's been released. There have been a couple of worms, but no viruses.
Exactly. So it's not that it's impossible, but it's damn difficult.
Yes. Exactly. Good point.
And Andrew said he said the problem is that the average Linux user is much more technology. But, I don't believe that's the case. I think it's even noobs. Part of the newbies, part of the fact is that unless they're willing to do, to jump through a bunch of hoops to install backdoor software or whatever. I mean, Trojans are always going to exist, but a Trojan isn't the same thing as spyware or a virus. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Right.
My parents have been running a Linux box for 4 years. They don't know anything about computers. They've never had a problem. Every friend that they've got that's running Windows has had spyware or viruses running on it.
Everybody that runs Windows has spyware or virus. I have not found one Windows system that does not have some sort of a malware infection of one kind or another.
Agreed.
Anywhere. It starts out with like weather bug and then just expounds from there.
We need Weatherbug for Linux.
Yeah, Weatherbug for Linux.
You install it as root, it runs as root.
something to just slow your system down to an absolute
dials fall. Out as root. It has the capability of running any application as root at the whim of, even taking over your current application. It allows you to let remote users run it as root.
Yeah, I just want to point out that I don't want to... Marcel hasn't been to Canada. Viruses can't survive. Marcel has been to Canada. Marcel lives in Canada.
I was going to say.
And I shoveled out my driveway in minus 24 degree weather a couple of days ago with a wind chill of minus 38. That's Celsius.
That's pretty brutal.
I just want to throw that out. Anyway,
that's crazy.
Hey, it's Canada,
Yeah. Well,
but anyway, I don't want to get complacent, and I don't want to give the idea that I am complacent here. But but by default, it is a more secure system. I'm not saying anything is perfect. I mean, the closest thing to perfect you're ever going to get is unplug the damn box, turn it off, and put it in a closet.
Right.
You know, then you're going to be 100% perfectly safe. And even then, you're not, because somebody could break into your house and steal it in the middle of the night. You know.
That's true.
But there's a level of security that is substantially higher.
Right.
Certainly.
Now, what do you think of the news that was just that Microsoft is going to limit the capabilities of pirated versions of their software to be patched and updated?
I think it's great news.
I think it's partially great news, but not. It's not just the person who's running that pirated software that's going to be affected. It's the rest of the world out there. The entire internet
understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. Quite frankly, I don't think anybody should be running pirated software.
I agree.
If they didn't buy their version of Windows, they should get it off their PCs and they should install Linux.
Absolutely.
You know?
That single statement is going to come as a huge shock to a lot of small, medium-sized businesses out there who are currently pirating their software from computer to computer. And there are a lot of them that do that, you know. So I suspect that people are going to start seeing a little bit of an insurgence in Linux installs.
So if they're going to do that, which essentially is going to eventually render that Windows PC inoperable, why don't they just, if they can disable, you know, patching of pirated software, why don't they just disable the operating system to go right off from the bat?
I don't think it's going to render it inoperable.
Eventually. Come on.
What they're doing is they don't want to give them any upgrades or anything in a couple of weeks.
Why not just render it inoperable from the get? It's pirated. Boom. Shut it off.
I think that'd be an outstanding idea.
But that would destroy their revenue, because if they did that, then that would have people all upset.
That's why we, as representatives of the open source movement, have to be there at the company's, on hand at the company to suggest to them that there might be an alternative and a way to save money.
We need a virus that goes out there and formats a hard drive and installs damn small Linux.
Installs DSL, yeah.
Damn small Linux out there.
That's what we need.
I think the installing Linux is a great alternative to dealing with license issues. It's a fantastic idea.
It's just wonderful.
Can't come soon enough, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
Then we'll all be switching over to BSD and say, "God damn Linux!"
Can't stand it.
Okay, all right. One more time for the record. Everybody out there, you have to install Linux on somebody's PC or hand out a live CD to somebody new before the end of next week. How's that?
Live CDs. That's easy to
definitely.
Do.
Definitely.
Anybody can do that.
That's a good idea.
But I want everybody to do it.
Yeah.
And then I want them to tell two friends, and I want them to tell two friends, and so forth.
Somebody's beeping.
Oh, wait a minute. That sounds like an old commercial, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still usable today. Oh, you know what? We gotta wrap this up, because we're gonna get cut off of Bin Rev Radio in just a few minutes.
That's right.
We have to stick to a timetable.
And my son is probably gonna wake up for a diaper change in about 15 minutes here.
All right.
Now that's an important call.
Yeah,
right
you
there.
Know that. Yeah. Dirty diaper.
Been there. Yeah. All right, Marcel, we really appreciate having you on here. You know, by all means, feel free to get a hold of us anytime you want to, you know, get on a Wednesday night and just chaw to the general public. We'd love to have you on.
You know, you are actually our first official interview/guest that we've ever had on
the show. Yeah, he's our first,
like,
celebrity guest
kind of thing. Right, celebrity
guest.
You are the first. We're really ecstatic to have you on. This is really new for us to be able to do something like this.
I'm so glad to have been here. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
It's been fantastic. Thanks, guys.
We hope that we can definitely have you on again. You're willing to come on again sometime in the future.
Well, thanks for the invite. I appreciate it.
And definitely, when your new book comes out, we definitely want to bring you back and have you talk about it. if that would be okay with you.
Right, his new book, Shh, Nobody Knows.
Yes.
Shh, Nobody Knows. Shh.
That new book on
nobody
the desktop.
Nobody knows, exactly. Just something I can tell you, though. I'm actually going to be talking to my publisher. I've been asked to talk at their international sales conference in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to have the ear of a lot of book salespeople from basically all over the world, and I'm going to be talking open source and Linux. So
awesome.
Fantastic. Are you going to be at Linux World Expo in Boston?
I'm going to be missing that one, partly because I'm going to this international sales conference.
Oh, bummer. So.
However, I am going to be at the Linux World Expo in Toronto in April.
That's new, right?
What's that?
The Toronto Linux Expo. That's fairly new, isn't it?
It used to be called Real World Linux, but now it's been rolled into Linux World Expo. So,
gotcha.
Fantastic.
Man.
What?
Sounds like a road trip for us.
Yeah,
it's a road trip. Alan finally speaks. Woo!
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, since we're wrapping this up, I'd like to say thanks to everybody out there, and thanks for having me here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll definitely have you on again.
Great.
I look forward to it.
Take care, guys.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And
right.
There you have it, folks.
Any parting words?
Marcel Gagne.
Thanks again, Marcel. That was
really, really,
really
appreciative.
Cool.
Definitely. Fantastic.
See, now if we have more celebrity guests call in on Skype, we're going to have to raise the bar a little bit now because, you know, Marcel was such a good interview and a good sport about just chewing the rag with us and stuff.
We have
one.
Michael Stutz on the docket for an interview. Linux Cookbook 2nd Edition coming up very shortly.
That's right.
The only thing that we're holding back on is actually we're going through the book a little bit and we just
reading the book.
Yeah,
so we know what
the second edition is a lot bigger than the first edition. I have the first edition and I want to go through there and be ready to talk with him. So he'll be coming up in the future. Really want to thank Marcel for coming on.
That
and anybody out there, if you know anybody you know that you think would be willing to come on the show, and you know, reach out to them. We'll be reaching out to more people. We'd really like to have more guests on the show. And
On the chat, they're saying that we should try to get Leo Laporte. I would love to have Leo on. Leo's great.
Leo would be cool to have on.
He's very well-spoken, and he's very knowledgeable, and he can talk. And lowest common denominator for the common person to understand what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, we'll look into that.
It's pretty low for us.
We'll have our PR representative, Pat.
That's right.
I'll try.
Reach out. We do have to close it down because...
Or Kevin Rose. Kevin's into Unix.
I think we're already lost our stream. I got 2201 over here.
Yeah, we're done.
We got to close it up.
We're
going to be here next week.
Yep, same bad time, same bad channel. Thanks, everybody, for listening to...
I'm going to go potty. Wonder if they have a hoagie guy in Canada.
Right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to us on the Tech Show.
Thank you.
Catch us next week, and here's our...
And maybe Alan will be back.
Yeah.
I'll be back next week. Right. Don't worry.
You know, that wasn't the right music.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, Pat.
Good
The Linux Link Tech Show.
Linux Link Tech Show.